Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q1 FY26 earnings conference call hosted by Jubilant FoodWorks Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Baldev Mall from Jubilant FoodWorks Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you so much, Nirav. Welcome to Jubilant FoodWorks Quarter 1 FY26 earnings call for investors and analysts. We are joined today by senior members of the management team, including our Chairman, Mr. Shyam S. Bhartia, our Co-Chairman, Mr. Hari S. Bhartia, our CEO and MD, Mr. Sameer Khetarpal, our CEO of Turkey Business, Mr. Aslan Saranga, and our CFO, Ms. Suman Hegde. We will commence with key thoughts from our Co-Chairman and then turn to our CEO and MD to share his perspective.
Sorry to interrupt you. We are losing your audio.
Can you speak a little louder?
We will commence with key thoughts from our Co-Chairman and turn to our CEO and MD to share his perspectives. After the opening remarks from the management, the forum will be open to question and answer session. A cautionary note: some of the statements made on today's call could be forward-looking in nature, and the actual results could vary from the statement. We will also share the replay and transcript of the call on the company's website under the investor relations section. I would now like to invite Mr. Hari S. Bhartia to share his views with you. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Baldev. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us on our Quarter 1 FY26 earnings call. I'm pleased to share that Jubilant FoodWorks has delivered a very strong start to FY26 despite a challenging demand environment. We expect the demand environment to improve quarter on quarter going forward. Our results reflect the strength of our consumer franchise, our execution, and our strategic choices. We remain focused on protecting our core value propositions: affordability, quality, and convenience, while driving operational efficiencies. We continue to expand our footprint, adding 71 net new stores during the quarter and taking our total network to 3,387 stores across countries in which we operate. This expansion is aligned with our long-term strategy and reflects our confidence in our brands and in our markets. Consolidated revenue for the quarter stood at rupees 2,260 crores, marking a 17% year-on-year growth and an impressive like-for-like growth of 11.6% year-on-year for Domino's. Our continued focus on cost and productivity is yielding results, with pre-Ind AS EBITDA margins improving year-on-year. We are also seeing fantastic response to our new innovative product offerings: Lunch Feast, Chicken Sides, and Big Big Pizza, launched in the second half of FY25, are doing very well with consumers. Internationally, our Turkey business team continues to navigate a high-inflation environment with agility and resilience. Business has generated healthy free cash flows and strong profitability. By next quarter, we will start funding the cost of acquisition debt from Turkey. This is an important milestone for us. Jubilant FoodWorks' performance is a result of disciplined execution and high-performance culture across the organization. We are building a durable, future-ready business, one that balances growth with resilience and innovation with discipline. As we move forward, our focus remains clear: to deliver competitive, sustainable performance while staying true to our purpose and values. We remain committed to delivering long-term value and embracing the opportunities ahead with the same Be the Bold spirit that has defined our journey so far. With that, I will now invite our Managing Director and CEO, Samir Kesarpal, to take you through the operational and financial performance in great detail.
Thank you, Mr. Bhartia, and good evening, everyone. The last quarter has been nothing short of exceptional for Jubilant FoodWorks. Our teams have executed brilliantly, delivering results against odds, exceeding both our internal targets and our commitment to you, our investors. Across every brand and geography, our strategy is delivering compounding results. We have accelerated menu innovation, rapidly grown the share of our own digital assets, made decisive progress towards 20-minute delivery, sharpened our focus on growth and margins in Domino's India, scaled Popeyes towards becoming India's most loved chicken brand, and generated healthy cash from operations in our business in Turkey. On every one of these fronts, the quarter stands out as one of our best. Let me talk about the growth highlights first. Group system sales reached 2,671 crores, powered by strong consumer engagement across brands and markets. We added 71 net new stores this quarter, expanding our network to 3,387 stores across the markets. Domino's India led the way with 61 net new ads, now present in 484 cities. A clear reflection of our confidence in the long-term growth potential of the Indian QSR market without losing the short-term opportunity. Consolidated revenue grew 17% year-on-year to 2,261 crores, while standalone revenues grew 18.2% year-on-year to 1,702 crores. Domino's India delivered an impressive 17.7% revenue growth, driven by 17.3% order growth and 11.6% like-for-like growth. Our third consecutive quarter of double-digit like-for-like growth. Delivery like-for-like growth stood at 20%, even with the full impact of free delivery now in the base. Mature store ADS reached a new high of 85,396, reflecting strong throughput and operational excellence. Delivery channel grew by 24.6% year-on-year, while dine-in also increased after a long time by 2.5%, supported by targeted consumer initiatives. On profitability and margin discipline, we continue our approach to cost reduction and capital allocation. On pre-Ind AS basis, the EBITDA grew by 18.2% to 292 crores with margins at 12.9%. Standalone pre-Ind AS EBITDA rose ahead of revenue at 22.5% year-on-year to 205 crores with margin expansion of 42 basis to 12%. While gross margin dipped due to a deliberate value-led pricing, mix shifts, and the extended IPL season, and the overwhelming success of Big Big Pizza, these actions drove superior growth, stronger new customer acquisition, while protecting the overall margins through operating leverage and tight cost discipline. On post-Ind AS basis, interest cost declined 17.6% year-on-year, thanks to better debt management and working capital efficiency, further strengthening profitability and cash flows.
No, fortune chapter, you're losing your audio.
Okay, I can only speak louder. Effective capital management has led to meaningful bottom line improvement. consolidated and standalone PAT grew by 59.8% and 29.5% respectively. On innovation and digital engagement, for non-veg lovers, we launched Chicken Burst Pizza this quarter, a new format that's already gaining traction and building on our cheesy platform range. Our digital ecosystem continues to scale with monthly active users of about 15 million, up 21.5% year-on-year. App installs are up 19.4% to 12.3 million, and loyalty members at 37 million, up 48.6%. The metrics reflect our ability to drive consumer engagement repeats powered by our technology. Popeyes momentum is now strong with double-digit SSG growth in South Indian markets and improving restaurant profitability both year-on-year and quarter-on-quarter. We now expanded to West with a healthy pipeline for Q2. Our investments in the business in Turkey is delivering exactly as intended, PAT accretive, cash positive, and high ROC. The business reported 519 crores in revenue with a 9.4% PAT margin. While LFL growth was moderated by CPI price lag, order volume grew healthy and profitably improved through cost discipline and capital management. Coffee in Turkey now operates in 38 cities with 167 cafes, winning on value and service. Overall, I sum up the performance as we are building, as we are agile today, ready for challenges, and building a multi-brand consumer-first food tech enterprise. The focus is clear, growth and profitable growth, acceleration of innovation, digital leadership, and operation excellence. With strong momentum across all our brands and market, we enter the new quarter with confidence and conviction to do better. With that, I request the moderator to commence the Q&A session.
Thank you very much. We'll now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. For better audio clarity, all participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from line of Percy Panthaki from IIFL Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. My question is, it's been like 2.5 years since we have taken any price hikes. Now our SSSG also has stabilized over the last 2 to 3 quarters at a double-digit kind of a number. So what is really holding us back from taking a price hike now?
Yeah, so Percy, good question. I think in few calibrated places, we are taking price increases firstly, right? And what you see over here is the our order, like our LFL growth in value terms is slightly ahead of order growth. That's what I mentioned. So it is happening, but I want all of our investors and analyst friends to step back. We are here trying to build a 5,000 crore franchise, a 5,000 store franchise, right? I think this is the time where we penetrate more, we get the throughput per store, and the leverage is coming in pre-Ind AS basis. It's very easy to take price hike at this stage, right? And I get like several proposals every day on my table. I am going in for growth, and I can see the profitability improving at a pre-Ind AS level, hopefully at post-Ind AS, and whatever gross margin decline we have, we are seeing actually the leverage coming in supply chain and multiple other places. So what you are saying, we will take it at the right time. We know where to take it. We have done the full analytics, but we'll pull the trigger when we have to.
Just to add on that, Percy, from while Sameer has mentioned that we've taken calibrated pricing, the inflation is not really that high yet, right? So it is still at a benign stage. While yes, we might look at daily inflation, but there are many other components with the food commodity basket which we play with. So So inflation is not really high. That is not really what's coming and hitting the gross.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we are losing your audio a little bit.
Yeah, I got it.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, my second question is on the loyalty plan. Now, it's been fairly long since we have launched it. So, we are hoping that you can share some more data on this. So, I understand you do share sort of the number of customers and stuff like that. But what I'm really looking at is that for a customer who has enrolled in a loyalty plan, how has his behavior changed versus when he was not in the loyalty plan? So does his AOV increase? Does his frequency increase? If you can share some kind of numbers or some kind of data on that, it will be really helpful.
So I will share three points over here, Percy. Firstly, our own assets are growing the fastest, right? So loyalty has a role to play over there. Second is frequency have begun to move up, right? So last year we put free delivery, we acquired customers at an unprecedented phase. So when we calculate frequency, we calculate total number of orders divided by total number of customers, including new customers. So that number is beginning to go up. And third is the cohort, right? So in the cheesy rewards loyalty program, after earning 6 pies, you get a free pizza. That cohort 4+ is seeing the fastest growth. So I'm giving you a analytical but a qualitative answer, Percy. On all three accounts, without revealing the numbers, loyalty program is genuinely working. It is one of the important components of driving our own digital asset growth.
I understand. I'm not looking for numbers, but if you can tell me, see, loyalty has two or three benefits. One is that it can help recruit new customers. Secondly is that it can help increase the AOV of the existing customer. Or third, it can help increase the frequency of ordering. So if you were to rank these three benefits in terms of ascending order, okay, which is giving you the most of the benefits and which is contributing to the lesser part of the overall benefits, that is what I was just looking at without any numbers.
The biggest benefit of the rewards program is the long-term value of loyal customers. So it is the not AOV, it is AOV into frequency of the loyal customers. So our average frequency is about 3, right? Cheesy rewards kick in at 6, right? So it fundamentally attacks customers who love Domino's, right? Who love pizza, and when they're making a choice, this is one of more factors, one of additional factors other than delivery, innovation, highest quality of cheese, etc., to come back to Domino's app, right? So the way it is attacking is long-term value of customers who eat 4+ times the pizza.
Understood. And lastly, if I might squeeze in one question. See, we started doing this double-digit LFL from Q3 last year. So we have one more quarter of relatively low base, then we hit the high base of Q3. So when we do hit that Q3 high base, how do we think of the YOY LFL going from there on? Would you say that you would endeavor to maintain the high growth irrespective of base? Or do you think the base effect does matter? And if it does, how much of an impact could that make?
Percy, I will give the same answer what I gave last quarter. Right? Bases do matter, right? So, but I think again, I will request you to step back. At a 4 quarters of like these double-digit like-for-like growth, we will be expanding to the seams of the store in terms of operations. Right? And that's what we are seeing, right? And I think the teams have done a great job of sweating the asset, using the same, doing lesser number of splits and growing the growing the same store. So I think at some level, to me, splits will increase and will be obviously our payback period, ROIs, those will be intact, right? And from a base perspective, I think what is, again, I will draw your attention to why are we growing, right? So it is not just a base effect. We have done five things, right? We expanded the pace of innovation. We invested heavily in digital assets. We did free delivery. In top metros, we are the best in terms of 20-minute delivery. And lastly, we have like expanded the teams on the ground to have daily rigor, right? Like this, for example, this Raksha Bandhan, it was raining heavily. We exceeded all our expectations and yet delivery metrics came ahead of our what we were internally anticipating on day like that. So that combination of factors, that is not just base and therefore we are riding on the base. I'm very confident the measures we have taken should take us beyond the bases also.
That's all from me, Sameer. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you very much. Next question is from the line of Nihal Jham from HSBC Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi, Sameer and team. Good evening. Two questions from my side. The first is on the delivery dine-in divergence that we are seeing. Even if I look at our dine-in channel, we've obviously launched the 99 and the 149 value meal. So there is a clear-cut case of value and all the other five aspects that you mentioned other than the delivery charge being very much a part of the dine-in channel also. So what is it that is driving such a big divergence in the two channels? And if you say allocated to the delivery charge, is it that that has had the maximum impact among the five elements that you just highlighted right now?
Yeah, no, I think firstly, eating at your home from QSRs, whether through a carry-out or through delivery, is a worldwide trend, right? And aggregators have obviously accelerated it, COVID boosted it, and consumers are looking to eat at home more and more, the QSR food, which stands for value. So that trend is intact. So that is driving one of it. And then when it comes to delivery accuracy, delivery comfort, ease of ordering, value that we give, that these are underlying factors that is fueling the delivery, right? So if I'm pressed for time, and which is happening more and more in our cities, right, we are becoming more urban, more nuclear, right? Those trends, underlying demographic trends are there. That is what is fueling delivery. On dine-in, right, so the way I want to just correct the understanding over here, Nihal, in humility. See, our on-premise includes dine-in and takeaway.
Yes.
Right? So a customer can come in, right? I want to eat there. Just eating at the restaurant is also growing at 20%. We don't disclose dine-in and carry-out, right? It's the carry-out business that is like, because of free delivery, has moved. Otherwise, there was a incentive for customer to save 50 rupees when the delivery charges were there with free delivery. So I think I did give a little bit of a positive undertone on dine-in. At least it is growing at a full system level. It is not declining. The reason is here the bases are actually helping, right? But overall, our dine-in, trust me, has been one of the best in terms of the customer input, has been the best in the last 3 or 4 years.
Understood. Just to clarify, you did say that leave apart the takeaway business which you highlighted earlier, the dine-in growth has been very strong, very close to what the delivery growth has been.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's very helpful. My second question was on what this is seen, I think only an addition of one store. Just thoughts on where that brand is in terms of, I know you mentioned that 100 store is the threshold where you start giving more data, but maybe the pace of addition was slightly lower. Where do you expect the store addition to scale up for the next full year? And even on SSG, specifically highlighting, say, South India, any comments on the rest of the country on the adoption of that plan?
So I think the location strategy, product strategy, leading with both both dine-in and delivery, our own app. That strategy is very clear. I think the slower growth in the quarter is an aberration, right? We already entered Mumbai with 3 stores, right? And we are building 2 more stores in Mumbai. So you will see the right. So we know where to open next 100-150 stores. When we get the locations, we will open the stores. So this is nothing. It is more about finding the location and negotiating on the rentals. And like I said, 3 stores in Mumbai are already open. 2 are under construction. I am entering the Q2 with a reasonably healthy pipeline.
That's helpful, Samir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next question is from line of Aditya Soman from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening, and thanks for the opportunity. So 2 questions from me. So firstly, I just wanted to understand this GM decline a little bit better, because you indicated that you're pushing the value agenda, but I thought that the free deliveries now are completely, should be in the base. And secondly, even when I look at the free delivery, we are seeing the packing charge, for example, has gone up, almost fully offsetting that free delivery amount compared with what it was 5 or 6 quarters ago. So I just want to understand this gross margin decline. And then the second question is just overall also in terms of profitability for the standalone business. If I look at the EBIT or PAT over a sort of 2-3 or 5 year period, it's basically we've seen no growth. In fact, over a 3 year period, it's a sort of double digit decline in profit. How does one address this, given that we've got very strong SSG, very strong top line numbers now, but the profitability overall remains muted?
Yeah, I think let me address profitability. I think you are seeing the effects of profitability in this like SSG in the profitability. PAT has grown 30% ahead of the revenue, right? So that is what we are also focusing on. And of course, the SSG has to flow into EBITDA and PAT, right? We are very clear about it. This is not a revenue business. So I hope that addresses. I hope you looked at that number. Right, and it should improve from here. We had given that over a 3 year period, we should improve by at least 200 basis points on standalone basis. So that guidance remains, actually, to be very honest. Now, the first question you had was on gross margin. So I think the gross margin dilution is a result of 3 things. One is Big Pizza, which was we knew dilutive, exceeded our expectation by almost 2x. And the IPL, it was supposed to be for a limited time in IPL. We extended it for the full IPL, and also the IPL also got extended because of the border conflict. So there was that effect. Second is we had launched chicken. Chicken per se, we want to increase the salience of chicken. There we have taken some calibrated price increases when we looked at the gross margin. And third is we want to grow lunch, right? And the 99 rupee lunch is an outstanding proposition available only in dine-in. So these are all very strategic interventions, right? And we are sweating the assets. If lunch grows, in dine-in, we have to do lesser splits. So it is very well calibrated and you should look at pre-Ind AS results. The second thing which we look at internally, not only the recipe cost or the food cost, we also look at the supply chain cost, that is to deliver to the store. That is where we have seen maximum advantage. It is in fact one of the all-time lows in our history. It is almost 50 basis point of tailwind that we are getting just from our commissary and logistics operation. So we are seeing the leverage. I will not look at just the recipe cost standalone and look at the overall picture. And we are also working to improve. Several initiatives are there. And we see an improvement trajectory in the last 3 months.
No, I understand that, and thanks for the clarification on the gross margin. So my question actually was on the PAT, the net income was actually on sort of a 3-year or 5-year basis, right? So if I look at net income or EBIT, because the interest cost has gone up, so if I disregard interest cost, even the EBIT has declined at a CAGR of 11% on a 3-year basis, while our top line has grown 11% CAGR. So I'm just trying to understand what has led to this decline and how that will improve. Because 200 basis points still won't take it to what it was 3 years ago.
So let me answer that for you, Aditya. So you're absolutely right. And there are two points which I want to draw attention to here. One, at the point in time when the PAT was what it was, is the gross margin that we used to make. I think over a period of time in the few last few quarters, we've also said about, you know, where and how price sensitive the Indian consumer is. And we have seen that across the board, right? I mean, across not only the QSR industry, if you look at any consumer facing industry and in the environment that we operate in the competitive environment we operate in, much more competition than there was there 3-4 years ago, right? And when consumers are spoiled for choice, you have to be very, very efficient on your pricing. And hence some of those margins of the past were not sustainable margins if you want to protect your consumer franchise and you want to look at the long-term value that you're creating as a brand. So that's one effect, which of course now we're saying, you know, once we right-size it, we will improve the margins. I think there was a question previously also from Percy's end on saying, how are we looking at margins going forward? We will see this coming through because we know it's an impact of mix and we've invested, deliberately invested behind giving value back to the consumer, looked at customer acquisition, put value back in delivery. So that's one element which has impacted the PAT that you've seen in the historical 3 years back if I compare it. The second one is the depreciation, and you keep the interest cost out of it, but we have heavily invested behind capital investments on technology, on stores, and as we have called out, with a high investment cycle behind our supply chain assets, which are our commissaries, to support the growth that we will see going forward. Some of the capacities we have invested in are going to last us for the next 2 to 3 years, right? Of course, the impact of that comes in the immediate, in the depreciation line, which is what also you've seen a significant increase over. But in the long term, as this cycle we're getting off, and we're getting off that cycle in FY26, most of the investments now will be on ROIs, which are much better than a manufacturing asset, right? It's behind stores, which have a 2-2.5 year payback. It's behind technology, which sees a faster turnaround, which you're reflecting in the growth that we are seeing. We will see this improve, right? So there are two elements, just to summarize. One is, of course, the gross margins, which we will now start inching up, but we did take a sharp dip on it, which is, I think, the industry, across industry was important to do to get the consumer back to the fold. And the second is deposition, which you'll start seeing the leverage benefit flowing through as if the growth momentum continues. Yeah. So.
Thanks, Suman. That's very clear. Thanks for the detailed answer.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Vivek from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, team. A couple of questions. So first is on the delivery takeaway, you know, what you mentioned, Sameer. So the way in which you report, let's combine it together. The last, you know, the previous quarter, fourth quarter, you almost, you know, came to 0-1%, this quarter 3%. Do we expect this to, you know, or should we expect this to pick up as we go forward? Because one, of course, the base is there, plus the initiative that you have also been, you know, undertaking. That's the first part of the question. And where do you think delivery plus, you know, takeaway settles in the medium term?
Yeah. So I think the first question is, yes, I think we are working for, while we, like, execution on delivery will be the key, right, to service the demand. But shaping the demand on dining is something that we do very rigorously, and a lot of efforts have gone in. I think you will continue to see the results, in my opinion. So therefore, from neutralizing to plus 2.5-3% to 5-6% is what we are internally targeting, right? So it should improve. But the mix of, there is a huge tailwind on delivery, Vivek. The more supply we are able to create on delivery side, there is enough and more demand with weather vagaries, with traffic, with consumers, like, habit changing, with app, with bank offers, right? It's just that this
I think the growth momentum is there on the delivery side. So it is more, we have to supply, be ready at the right point, at the right cost. I don't know the answer to the question number two, to be very honest. The way I look at it is I want the customer to have a great choice with us. We should be available in all channels. Our own app should offer the best, most immersive pizza eating or pizza ordering experience. And our stores, which are neighborhood stores, will be like what, maybe 60-70 stores in Gurgaon alone. So in that kind of a setup, if somebody wants to eat in, take away, that's how we are building the business. And we genuinely want to shape the demands towards dine-in because it is accretive to the the P&L.
Right. And just a follow-up. So let's say deliveries today at about 73%. So basically, if let's say this number goes higher and higher, does that need any change in, you think your the way in which you are building stores, the way in which, you are staffing stores and so on and so forth? Or, in the medium term, you don't envisage this number going up now from the level that we are currently today?
Yeah, no, I think so we are constantly monitoring, right? So the 73% is an average, right? So there will be stores with 100% also. There will be stores will be less than 10% also. So in urban centers, when we specially split a store, we try to go with a delivery and carry out store. This is about 800 to 900 square feet store. In rural areas or in tier 3, tier 2, we are opening a 1500 because there the dine-in takeaway is like more than 50% or closer to 50%. So we are already calibrating and we are seeing what happened 2 years ago. So at the moment, for example, if any property which is there more than 1500 square feet, we actually say no. Right? So we don't want it. It doesn't add value. We know the business ultimately will shift towards or customer preferences will shift towards dining even in tier 2, tier 3 cities. So we are calibrating a lot of that and getting tighter on the property and the real estate that we ask.
Got it.
But we are not going to open dark stores, right? So I just want to go on record thing.
Okay, got it. And the other thing, Sameer, quite frankly, every time that we are on the call, there are a lot of questions on the margins. I think at least I totally appreciate the fact that, you are going after growth. Even if it is gross margin dilutive, at least EBITDA margin numbers are showing, that you are building business from a, with a medium-term lens, if not long-term. But just because there is so much of concern on margins, do you think on the gross margin side, this quarter has been, I think, one of the lowest? Do you think you are at the bottom on gross margins? That is first part to the question. And the second part is if you still have to dissect the let's say 200 basis point decline at standalone level, how much of this will you say will be because of promotion versus, let's say, new products which are margin dilutive?
So I genuinely believe, again, I can be wrong, but I genuinely believe that this is an aberration, right? And I do see margins improve, gross margins improve. And having said that, I also want you to notice that our supply chain cost has been lowest ever. So actually the delivered food cost to the store is not as bad as what you're seeing just on the recipe cost. That's one. The second is the almost 75% of the loss is coming from the new products that I spoke about. So which I think the sales exceeded our expectation on all three of them. And therefore, we have gone back in chicken, for example, taken price hikes. Right? So we are calibrating that. I don't think they will go down any further, in my opinion. They should ideally improve.
Okay. And sorry, just one follow-up. Why do you say, Sameer, there is an aberration in this line item?
Because because some of the changes, I think, got together. Like I said, the Big Pizza exceeding our internal estimates, IPL getting extended, right? And it didn't. Like we were positively surprised by that, right? Chicken, for example, in South India,
exceeded our internal targets. So for example, in chicken, we have gone back and corrected the price. On big pizza, we are now actually, we are re-engineering the product to see can we get more gross margins, right? So that can we, how do we make it more efficient? Can we do a few things in the factory, right? Can we make the store operation a little more leaner? So those things are under works. So that's why I feel more confident we know. And then controlling like operations in stores, right, as the throughput increases. So we are using technology to map the stores, to map the inventory. So a lot of effort. In fact, I'm personally spending enormous amount of time in digitizing our supply chain. So those are the pieces where the wastage, delivery costs to stores, inventories, excesses, those things I believe will come down, which is also sitting in the gross margin. Pricing, I'm very wary, right? I just don't want to go on record. Taking price increases is going to be very calibrated. I'm going for growth, and growth should give me leverage in the EBITDA lines.
Love your strategy. Thank you and wishing you all the best.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Jay Doshi from Kotak. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. My first question is, you know, when you introduce Cheesy Volcano, it was the introductory price was very attractive versus other products, similar products. Then you did the same with Big Pizza and, you know, the new Chicken Bus Pizza. So when you actually roll back the introductory price or take price increases, do you see the same level of traction in these innovations or it tapers off? So that's my first question.
No, I think you're right. I think it's a loaded question, so it's a, therefore a very intelligent question. I think consumers today are very savvy, right? They know where, how to compare the prices, and AI is only helping them like get faster. Right? Earlier, they used to take 7 minutes to compare across 5 apps and call the store. Now the AI is actually doing it for them. So price increases are going to be harder for the industry. And when we did take the price, we immediately saw the elasticity.
So sorry, we are.
So therefore, the way we. Hello, is this better?
Yes, sir.
Jay, can you hear us?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Yeah. So Jay, consumers are very smart. They have more tools to do price benchmarking. Price increases have to be very calibrated, right? Very thoughtful, done in a scientific, analytical manner, with proper A/B testing over at least 13-14 weeks. So that's what we do. In few cases, like Volcano Pizza, we have taken price increases. In Big Pizza, we did take price increase, but we saw massive elasticity against us. So we will roll back where we have to. We have to change, but the focus on gross margin continues, right? And through more efficient use and smarter use of analytics to get more in the bank.
Sure. One more follow-up there. Is there any possibility for you to consider platform fees because, you know, food aggregators have now, you know, are at 10...
I am dead against that. So Jay, I have seen this play out like almost 15 years of my life. Right? Mm-hmm. You do get a bump in one quarter, two quarter, right? Our own app is growing for a reason, right? Because we kept it simple, we kept it unhidden prices. Very easy to do it, right? All of what you are suggesting, we can do it like tomorrow morning. It's hard to build long-term businesses that on customer trust where you're tightening your own belt and not passing to them. So we are going in for that. That's a clear strategy. But all the levels you are suggesting, we have it in our back pocket and technology is ready. I can roll it from midnight to night, but we are not going.
Sure. Last one on Popeyes. Now, you know, at the investor day, you indicated you need another 3 to 6 months to, streamline a few things for Popeyes. And, you know, your last week's small interview on CNBC, you appeared, sounded more confident. So could you give us sort of an update of, you know, what progress Popeyes has made in the last 6 months? And how do you sort of, at the expansion plans growth? You know, from a slightly from the next 12 months perspective.
Well, I think we've made tremendous progress in the last 6 months. five things have happened over there. Firstly, we have relentlessly focused on building the team. Right? In fact, I would say what Domino's team we did about 2-3 years ago with splitting off regions, getting physical digital leaders, we have replicated the same playbook even just with 60-odd stores. Second is, we were focused on getting the delivery infrastructure right. It's very hard to do for a 60-store network, which is the patchy coverage even in the city, right? So we've gotten that piece and we have combined it with the Domino's team, which does this like 40,000 riders in a day at scale. So, and we're building more and more technology to combine it. So that is number two thing we've done. We have fixed delivery. Third is I personally spend time with the 60 restaurant managers every quarter, right, telling them what is important along with the leadership team. We train them. We are building the business in a very like a startup-like mode. And fourth is getting the unit economics right. So a lot of effort has gone in on measurements, food cost, lot of capex reduction, supply chain capacity build-up, automation in supply chain. So I feel very confident that. And now we are beginning to invest in marketing. So take for example, we were very under-indexed on buckets, and we've gone back and fixed that. We fixed the core value proposition. How will we differentiate as a brand in this cluttered market and stand for the most loved chicken? So those pieces we have worked, and I you'll see a lot of compounding happening over there.
Thank you so much, and wish you the best, very best.
Thank you. Next question is from line of Manish Vodha from Invesco Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hey, Sameer, thanks for doing the call. Just one question. You know, you all are doing well despite the macros, given the multiple interventions which you have done. If you can help me understand either qualitatively or quantitatively, you know, how is our brand relevance on aggregators now? You know, that'll be useful to, you know, understand, you know, how would it stick around when we reduce incentives or promotions? Thanks.
Yeah. No, I think firstly, the relevance of aggregators and our own digital assets is for the customers wanting reliable delivery, right, and options. So that is where we come in and that is one big tailwind and operational advantage we carry in our business. So therefore, we work very well with both the aggregators. Overall, we believe as we do mark-to-market, our own estimates, we believe we are gaining share. And we want to be there wherever customers are. So if the aggregators are launching new deals, properties, new separate delivery options, we want to be there. So we are looking at the customer where the customer is and following the customer versus trying to say customer should come to me on this channel with this kind of an proposition.
But Sameer, would you have some data to, you know, I'm just trying to understand, let's say when you say market share gain, you know, within the category or at a broader level, you know, or top 10 cities, any sense, you know, how would our share stack, let's say what it was, let's say 12, 18 months back versus today?
I see internally I don't want to share the numbers, but when you look at like even the listed QSRs and look at the growth, right, revenue growth, you will get it, right, yourself. So very easy to do, but we have a more scientific approach where we also go to unlisted pizza players. We obviously get market share information from aggregators. We overlay our own internal data. So I think you will be very positively surprised. See, 20% like-for-like growth in delivery alone will give you that we are gaining share, right? That is, I think, the single biggest data point.
And sorry, Sameer, just if I have to think about, when you think about incentives, these are not, let's say, you know, higher margins to the
aggregators, but more consumer incentives. This is what, so when you plan to, you know, it's more targeted advertising or targeted promotions, which will reduce over a period of time, rather than, let's say, negotiate harder with aggregators because of having higher share in the channel. I'm just trying to understand from a gross margin picture.
The gross margin has nothing to do with aggregator channel or anything, right? So gross margin that you see is the price we get for an order and the food cost for that order, irrespective of where it comes from. So there's nothing to do with aggregator negotiation or anything. We work very well with aggregators. We want to deeply partner with them on all their programs. We believe they've built a strong franchise, and we continue to invest our own technology, our own stores. It's quite complementary in my opinion.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Aditya Vikram from DB Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, am I audible, Samir?
Yes, Aditya.
Hi, thank you very much, and it looks like a good job done. I had just one question to the point which Suman was making. You said most of the technology investments are now writing benefits or will start writing benefits in short period of time, right? What would be an idealistic impact on the gross margin as such?
Sorry, the what benefit?
Technology.
The technology benefits, what would they transpire into, right? You said in next few quarters we will start seeing the impact. So I just wanted to quantify it.
Okay. So, okay, there are multiple areas where the technology is being deployed and you will see the implications. If you want to specifically understand, because technology on store operations that we do will, of course, reflect in better employee cost, productivity, so it will appear below the gross margin line. If you talk specifically of gross margin, where is technology being deployed? We have better conversions on our app. Right, and because of the app interventions that we are doing in terms of consumer cohorting information that we get, in terms of ensuring that there's a good uptime for consumers, cross-selling that happens. If you go into our app today, you'll see multiple options where we've adjusted things to help cross-sell, upsell, more targeted discounting, which is done basis on where the consumer cohort sits in a particular location or in a particular region. So all of that helps us do better smart pricing, better discounting, and better conversion of consumers. This is what will reflect in your gross margin line, right? But there's also technology investment going on behind store operations getting better, behind our own delivery management system, which ensures that we get good delivery executives onto the portal, which ensures that we can deliver against our dot delivery on time promise. All of that will reflect into our below gross margin but above EBITDA line. So that's the various kinds of technology. But specifically on gross margin, you will see it in better and more smart pricing, better and more targeted discounting, and better conversion happening because of the app experience for the customer.
Okay, but you still won't be able to quantify it as to how much will our gross margin improve now that we are not going to do a lot of technology investments, correct? Or you have some sort of an estimate, but you don't want to call out?
No, Aditya, I think one is technology investment called out. It goes, investment will get depreciated, which will go below the EBITDA line. So it will not come. That improvement of lesser investment in technology will not go, and we do not intend to invest lesser in technology. We only expect to get better returns on that investment that we do in technology. Right, which will reflect in the gross margin line, but the technology investment steps in depreciation which goes below the EBITDA line. Yeah.
No, I understand the EBITDA line. I was just trying to understand that what would be the impact on the revenue and everything, but based on everything which you suggested and less. Right. Okay. My question is, Samir, you mentioned that you are very cautious, or you will only take calibrated price rises because of how the Indian consumer is, right? Is there any sort of experiment done on reducing the size of the pizza's size, which is basically diluted?
Sorry, Aditya, your voice is breaking up.
Apologies. Am I now?
No, sir. Your audio is still breaking.
Give me one single. Sorry. Any better? Hello?
Yes, please.
Yeah, so this question was specifically to Sameer. Sameer, you said you want to take a very calibrated and cautious approach when it comes to price increases, right? And you have seen, and in one of the participants who was trying to understand that what is the traction whenever you increase the prices. I just wanted to understand from the management perspective that are you all guys doing any experiment on the big size pizza where you are reducing the size? Because these are highly margin dilutive. Is there any sort of experiments or any sort of work going on that front as well?
So I think firstly the big pizzas come with big ticket size and therefore give more leverage on the cost below gross margin lines, including delivery. So therefore, it at a percentage terms it may be dilutive, but absolute terms it is accretive. So that's one piece to keep in mind, right? So second is again in this environment, we want consumers to get more food, get more satiated and come back. And we are seeing that consistently, right? It is, I mean, just anecdotally, I'm sharing you, like my peers in the industry and many customers that I know will catch hold of me on a bus station or a rail station and say the big pizza is such an outstanding innovation. So again, the idea is to grow the business, franchise it. At the same time, we are running almost 30 experiments as we speak on taking calibrated pricing. There are 30 initiatives being run to reduce cost, right? It is not about putting less cheese though. It is about, can we get better at storage of cheese? Can we do better buying of cheese? Can we do better procurement of oil? Can we reduce localization of corn, right? So I think those are the initiatives we are focused on. And there are several such initiatives and I'm confident the opportunity continues to exist. Plus, this top line growth is giving us leverage in rentals. It is giving us leverage in the G&A cost. So I remain very confident about the margin trajectory also. And I'm not too concerned about it. Again, on pricing, like I said, we are going in for growth. It's very easy to take whatever you are suggesting, add convenience fees, increase pricing, increase packaging charges, but we are not doing it.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sameer. I just have one feedback for you and your team, if you can. I myself am a Domino's customer and we do order it for various of our friends as well. I think most of the numbers which are listed online for your stores are either inaccurate or don't work. So if you can work and it causes a lot of frustration when you're actually ordering in between a game and you're waiting for a very long period of time. So if you can work with your team to ensure that the numbers which are listed on Google and your apps are at least accurate and can ensure that we reach these stores. That probably will reduce some amount of frustration and cancellation also, I'm hoping.
Yeah, my sincere apologies for the poor experience. We are on it. I think hopefully AI will take over and then we'll not need any intervention. That's what we are building. But in the meantime, please if you can drop us an email where it is, we'll correct it.
We are already working on it, Ajay, but thanks for the feedback. It is very valid, but we are working on it. Yeah? Thank you.
Congrats. Thanks for the near future.
Thank you.
Next question is from the line of Sheila Rathi from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. So my first question was, Sameer, with respect to the competitive landscape. Just want to understand how the trends are, and especially from the point of view of which are the area, we have a lead on a lot of areas, be it tech, be it delivery, be it, you know, the whole innovation. Are we seeing any catch-up game being played by competition and any specific area you want to talk about? I know you talked about the market share gains in the recent quarters, but anything in specific if you would like to call out?
Yeah, no, I think there is nothing. I think we are, Sheila, we are more internally obsessed with our customers than looking at competition. Of course, we do benchmark our sales, our metrics. There are teams do it so that the customers eating at Domino's or shopping at Domino's, they get the best value and the best experience. So those things we do. I think I will talk more internally that I think we have a huge pipeline of building product platforms, right? We continue to invest in cheesy platform, as we call it. So therefore, meat bus pizza, non-vegetarian pizzas, you'll continue to see that growth. Huge opportunity to capture lunch, right? Our late night delivery has grown at a very fast, it has in fact doubled in last like 9 months. So we see great both customers looking for innovation in menu, day parts, and occasions like Raksha Bandhan and Independence Day and Friendship Day. Those we are very, very like bullish about the opportunity that exists with us. I only wish we can execute faster, right? So the demand is there.
Understood. Second question and the final one. You did mention about, you know, we are not looking to open dark stores. But, you know, when I look at the delivery numbers, that is 73% of revenues now. And you did say that in, you know, smaller towns, dining is over 50% in some parts. So just want to understand, in metros and tier one cities, is the delivery share much higher? And is there a case to have, you know, smaller size stores, or we still think that we will continue with the kind of stores we have been opening in the past?
I think it's horses for courses. In smaller and in the larger cities like Mumbai and Gurgaon and Delhi, we tend to open smaller stores. Unless or until it's a virgin area, which are very few in these cities, or it's a mall, for example. So we do tend to open smaller stores in these cities, which are more delivery centric, right? But if a customer walks in, wants to eat, right, should get a comfortable air conditioner and a table and a chair to sit, very functional. So we don't penalize that somebody wanting to come in the store has to find the store. And I think, Sheila, a lot about food is also seeing the food being made. So that generates trust in the brand, right? And versus doing 10 brands from a dark store. So we are very clear on that one. The ROIs have to work. And when we give a store approval, we genuinely like validate how much dine-in and carry-out sales will be there. That on that basis, we decide the store. Store sizes have come smaller, I would say, have become smaller in large cities. That calibration is an ongoing one.
Sameer, if you could remind us, what is that number now from a square feet basis?
So about 800, mostly when we split a store in large or urban centers, we go in for 800, 850 store, maximum 1,000. Right, we don't go definitely beyond 1200, right? While in like I said, in tier 3, tier 4, we do want to give 40 to 50 covers because there is demand for dine-in in those cities. So our standard size is 1200. It has actually gone a little lower than that, between 1100 and 1200 in last 24 odd months. So we are constantly calibrating that.
Understood. Thank you very much, Sameer.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next question is from the line of Latika Chopra from JP Morgan Chase. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi Sameer. Few questions from my side. I think the first one, just taking on from, you know, calibrating store sizes, I just wanted to get a sense on CapEx, for you in FY26. I heard someone mentioning, much of the commissary-led CapEx is likely behind us. If you could, you know, give us some color on what kind of efficiencies are you building on the CapEx front? That's the first question.
When you want to take that on add-in?
Sorry, Latika, just to understand, are you asking about how the CapEx, overall CapEx spend of the company will look in the years going forward, or you are specifically asking about store CapEx efficiency?
If you could comment on the overall CapEx, how you're looking at it, for the medium term.
Okay. So we are coming off a high cycle of supply chain commissary CapExes, like we said. But We do plan to accelerate our pace of increasing the number of stores that we open. If you recall from our investor day also, we said that the plan is because we believe there's potential in the country to open the next 1,000 stores in the next 3 years. Correct? Which will mean that there will be a higher amount of CapEx, which will now swing towards store openings. We'll continue to invest behind the technology and of course the operations on the ground to get the back-end infrastructure, be it in terms of our ERP systems, our processes, supply chain transformation, but more tech and store opening related CapExes will be where it'll happen. Which means your return on capital employed should typically go up because the payback cycles on these investments is better. That's the way we are looking at our CapEx spend. It will not be a dramatic recalibration or significant decrease in the CapEx cycle that we see over the next 2-3 years, but the portfolio, or rather the profile of the CapEx which will get spent will be different and will be more faster and higher revenue generating or return generating CapExes.
Sumant, on a store CapEx level, how should one think about on a per store basis an average CapEx?
We don't really comment out on, you know, how much we spend. Again, that can vary depending on the size and place of the store, Latika. Let me just give you some numbers in terms of percentage. Over the last 3 years, consistently, we are seeing that number come down. Like almost every year, we see a 10%-15% drop on the amount that we spend on the CapEx, coming predominantly from scale and as we get better on what technologies we use. The other vector that we really are looking at now is saying how much of the CapEx do we put in and how much can we get the landlords to invest behind, which also is a key area for us. It improves the ROI for us or the payback on our store and also brings down the amount of CapEx that we spend per store, which means we can open more stores with lesser amount of money. Right? I don't want to comment on a number because numbers can vary, but
Sure.
That's the way.
Okay. Over the last, you know, 3 years on a standalone basis, I think you've spent on an annual basis 700 crore-800 crore per annum. I was just wondering if the heavy commissioning CapEx is behind us and, you know, this absolute number on annual basis could probably moderate. I think that was what I was trying to get.
It will moderate to some extent, but like I said, it won't be a material moderation because I'm just recalibrating it from supply chain commissaries to store.
Understood.
Because I have built the supply chain capacity supply to those stores, right? Now I need to also generate the
demand.
Generate the demand to ensure I can leverage the supply chain CapEx, which I think is the right thing to do in the medium to long term. Yeah.
Understood. The second bit was, you know, in FY 2025, I think, if I recollect correctly, the drag from losses from emerging formats was about 200 basis points. I saw you mentioned that Popeyes has seen sequential improvement in profitability. How should one think about this drag? You know, how materially can it moderate, you know, in coming years?
In the next, I think again, something we have mentioned, the next couple of years, we are looking clearly that this drag will come down substantially, at least halve the drag in the next year or 12-18 months. That's the plan, right? While we continue to invest behind the Popeyes business, but on both the other two brands, we are materially bringing it down by improving unit economics. Expansion, as you can well see in the numbers we've come out with, have almost come down to a trickle or stopped, right? That's the way you can calibrate it. We are looking at over the next 2 years to at least halve the drag that we are currently seeing on the overall JFL margins.
Understood. Useful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Latika.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. On behalf of Jubilant FoodWorks Limited, we conclude today's conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.